Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Panning the Stream. My name is Dan Reichert. I'm one of the hosts of this here program. Sitting across the table from me is my wife, Bianca Reichert. Honey, how are you doing?
Hi.
Hi. How are you?
I am well. How are you, Reichert?
I'm doing great. We actually, we just finished watching some more anime. I believe this is technically anime. I think in the most literal, straightforward, direct definition of the word, like, this is absolutely anime, right?
There's no doubt about it.
Well, it's weird. Okay, so we watched Case Closed.
We did.
Which is a show. We watched it on Netflix. We watched, it's listed as Collection 17, Episode 1 through 3. And I think growing up, when I heard about anime, I think I thought it was all screaming and lasers and fireballs. And basically,
good anime is.
Well, yes. Being anime experts, you know. Well, okay. So we've just watched Dragon Ball and some Assassination Classroom. And
oh, well, I've watched more anime than that in my life.
That's true. You've watched way more than me. You come in as an expert, which we'll get into your history with this one. Yes, I became an expert. You were born an expert. You've always had more of an affinity for that type of fiction and pop culture than I have. Like, I liked it in a way when they tried to make the anime secret, like in Metal Gear Solid. Like, that's secret anime. I found out late in life. I found out in my 30s that I was secretly watching anime the whole time.
The only thing that's not anime about Metal Gear is the fact that it isn't like a drawn cartoon.
And I think that's how they secretly made it accessible to me.
No, you're saying anime is, you love anime. You absolutely love anime. You just had this block in your head that you couldn't watch it because it seemed like this very Japanese otaku thing that you couldn't
watch. I thought it was a level of nerddom below what I was willing to do back in, like, I was a giant nerd back all through school and everything, but I thought anime was too deep of a nerd level. And so this Trojan horse came in the form of Metal Gear Solid, which sneakily indoctrinated me into anime ways and anime ways of thinking. And it turns out I just like anime. You know, we do All Systems Goku, a Giant Bomb, and, you know, both Jeff and I have loved Dragon Ball, and you have watched every episode with me as well.
It's
we
great.
Love Dragon Ball. But I think that is what I thought anime was the whole time growing up, was screaming, fireball, laser, my hair changes colors when
I'm
mad.
Yeah, you have a reoccurring pattern with you is adamantly being opposed to something until you finally try it, and then you realize, hey, this is great.
You know what? But that's a step beyond where I get that from. I get it from my dad, who is, hey, I'm adamantly opposed to this thing. I'm also never going to give it a shot and realize I like it.
Well, yeah, congratulations. You're better than Paul Reichert.
No,
in this
I
instance.
Can't say that. I think Paul Reichert is a good man, and he's just very, he likes what he likes, and he doesn't really want to go outside that box.
Well, in regards to being stuck in his ways, to say that you're slightly better than him isn't much of a...
Okay, well, it's still improvement over previous generation.
Okay, yeah, but anime seems built for you. I mean, obviously there's a huge range of it. There's, like, the really romantic stuff, the really cutesy stuff, the stuff that's obviously meant for, like, teenage girls, you know.
Right.
The stuff that's,
Dragon
like,
Ball.
You know, really adorable, cute,
Do
Pokemon
they call that,
type
that's
of thing.
Chibi? Is chibi the cute thing?
When I hear chibi, and I think that's true, when I hear chibi, I think of, like, kind of the drawing style that's, like, the characters are short and fat, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think the little charms that come on the guns of the characters in Rainbow Six Siege are technically chibi.
Okay. Yeah, so...
Rainbow Six Siege is anime, right?
I've never been, like, huge on anime, like, obsessive about anime, but growing up, my oldest brother, Tom, went through a phase where he was super into anime, but just specifically, like, the really violent anime. And one of the first things I remember watching in my life was the Fist of the North Star movie. And if anyone listening has ever seen that movie, it's, like, super brutal, like, fingers going through chests and, like, partial decapitations, and there's nudity, and it's, like, a really adult story.
It sounds like Story of Ricky, but animated, like, punching through bodies and
Story
stuff.
Of Ricky is really silly. This is, like, super dark, and, like, you have to watch it. I think you'd really like
it. I think I would like it, too.
But there was that, and there was Akira, and there was... a few others, I don't remember, but they were all, like, pretty violent and stuff. So that was my intro to anime. So for me, growing up, I always thought anime is what my cool older brother watched. I never thought of it as a loser thing. And then, obviously, when Pokemon became a huge thing, I got really into Pokemon and stuff.
Right.
And then when I was, like, an early teenager in the early 2000s, I'd watch Adult Swim, and they'd have a lot of anime on there as well. And that was how I learned about Case Closed for the first time.
Okay. I think I think the door could have been swung open earlier in my life for this type of stuff if somebody had explained to me what you just said about how, like, oh, all this, like, super violent, you know, like, cool action stuff or whatever. Like, I thought it was unrealistic flying around Dragon Ball stuff. I didn't know that there was so much that, like, I was raised on.
And you have an appreciation for only the most realistic things. I mean, like wrestling, Metal Gear Solid.
Yes, you know, normal human interactions. But I grew up on Commando and Terminator and
totally
Rambo. Okay, take away the realism thing. I'm just talking more cool dude killing a bunch of bad dudes stuff. Like, that is my favorite form of fiction. Is that is like I really think the purest form of what I love about movies is Commando. And I don't think anyone ever explained to me when I was a kid that so much anime is just like, hey, here's this badass just killing a bunch of bad dudes. Which I love how we're doing this, and then we're going to go into the child detective show that we watch, which is not at all that. But I'm just saying, I could have been pushed into anime earlier in life if I would have known that there was so much badass stuff going
on. Well, yeah, and honestly, like, to call anime it's such a broad term,
right,
that for me to say, like, oh, you like anime, that is wrong, because I doubt you will like all the
right
types of anime.
That's like comparing, like, you know,
like, I don't like all anime. I mean,
I'm sure there's total garbage out there, but like, it's like saying that all cartoons are the same from Peppa Pig to South Park, you know. Yeah, it's a totally different thing. So I get that it's a very broad thing with many genres within it.
Yeah, well, we watched Cowboy Bebop last year.
Yes, we did.
Maybe like a year and a half
ago. I like
ago.
That.
Yeah, that show is really good. I used to love that as a kid. I always thought it was really cool, and it still is super cool.
It's got a ton of style, and I would like to keep watching that for sure.
Yeah, it's a good one.
But so this one, so Case Closed, when you were a kid, you watched this, and you said this was on Cartoon Network or Toonami or Adult Swim or something?
Yeah, so I don't know if they still have this, but in the evenings on Cartoon Network, there would be Adult Swim, which was, like, I guess more mature shows. Like, there was a lot of anime. There was, Robot Chicken, that kind of shit.
Right.
What was it? Inuyasha was an anime that I watched, which was, like, this, from what I remember, it was this, like, long, this kid with, like, long white hair and ears, and he was some kind of, animal ears.
I think they had, like, a GameCube game of that. I remember selling copies of this game called Inuyasha.
So I watched a little bit of Inuyasha. I watched a little bit of, I forget the name of it, but it's, like, this little kid who traveled around with this giant robot guy.
That's called The Terminator.
No. Well, okay, but it isn't that. Like, and the giant robot guy is, like, super sweet.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then there was Lupin the Third, that was on super late with Case Closed, and I would stay up to watch them.
Which, actually, I found out there was a crossover TV special. It's kind of like a short movie or whatever. It was Lupin the Third versus Detective Conan. So I wonder how that versus works, or if like a Jetsons meet the Flintstones or Simpsons meet the Critic type thing or something. I was always a sucker for stuff like that. Mm-hmm. It's like worlds colliding. So you watched, like, if you were to put a timestamp on it, when do you think you were watching Case Closed?
It was probably 13, or like 12, 13, 14. It was probably in like 2003, 2004.
Okay.
Maybe 2005, yeah.
Okay, on Cartoon Network.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha, okay. So the ones we watched here, it was confusing at first because, like, we looked on Netflix and it was just like Collection 17. So I don't know what Collection is, if that's a season.
It's so confusing. Every time we watch a show that's from a land that is not the USA, it's always like series or collection or just some weird thing. Like, can't they just make it easy for us dumb Americans?
Right. Yes. And it was also confusing because in the intro, the first time we saw it, we saw like a 50-year anniversary logo. And for the entire time I was watching the show, I was like, this fucking show has been on for 50 years? That's insane. And then I looked up some stuff afterwards and it's like, oh no, that was for like Weekly Shonen Sunday or something. It was like some magazine and they were like celebrating. I don't know enough about anime to know what all that means, but the show has not been on for 50 years. It's been on since like the early 90s. But yeah, the ones we're watching here appear to be quite recent, which mainly I'm timestamping because they play a PlayStation in these early episodes, and it's definitely a PS4 controller. It's not even like, it looks like straight up copywritten, like with the buttons, the face buttons being right, and like the trackpad and the options button.
Yeah, these episodes I think are from 2014.
Okay, so we're talking pretty recent here. And before we get into like what these episodes were about, I just want to say I really like this show. It really reminds me, it feels almost interactive in a way of you kind of trying to, like, if you're watching closely, you can pick up on stuff before they spell it out. Like, this is a mystery show. This kid is a detective and solving murders and things like that. And it almost reminds me of, there used to be a thing in the paper on Sundays called Slylock Fox. And Slylock Fox was a detective. And it would just be like a single panel. And it would almost be like a Where's Waldo type thing where there's a bunch of different stuff you can look at.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're supposed to ascertain based on the context clues and the panel, like, oh, who stole this lunchbox or whatever? And so then, like, the next week or whatever, you would see the solution. And so, like, it was really fun to look at that stuff and be like, oh, I think it was that bear or whatever. And,
oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So, like, as I was watching these episodes, I thought it was really fun to just be like, and there were a couple times that I did notice things. Mm-hmm. And then later on, it paid off. Like,
yeah.
It's clever. It's a clever show.
It is. It's a lot smarter than you think it would be for a show that stars a bunch of children. Well, obviously not starring children. They're drawn to be children.
Yes.
But I, going into this, I had no idea that the show was as long running as it is. I thought that it was like, it was made in the early 2000s and there was just like two seasons of it. I had no idea that there was like over 900 episodes of it at this point. And so when I realized that, I was kind of disappointed because I figured, you know, there's no way they could maintain the quality that I remember over 900 episodes. You know, because after our experience with, like, The Simpsons and shit, like, mm-hmm. that's shit, you know, you just can't maintain that level of stuff forever.
Right.
Different writers and everything. But it was really good. I mean, it was, as I remember, for the most part. There was obviously a lot of plot lines that they suggest, like, in the opening theme song and the closing song that, like, I have no idea who that girl is.
Right.
But, yeah, it was good. One thing I will say is it's pretty surprising that this kid, everywhere he goes, someone dies.
He's constantly surrounded by murder. And also, he's somehow not the most famous human being on the planet, despite being a child who is solving murders left and right.
Yeah, and like at a certain point, won't someone notice this kid is at the scene of all these crimes that are happening all the time? We should probably look into him and see what his background is.
Yeah, this is a bit fishy. If somebody was at the scene of like every murder for like 30 years, I think I'd be questioning that person. Yeah. Especially when I found out he had a magic bow tie and stuff, which we'll get to that in a second. So let's talk a little bit about these three episodes we watched. We watched a two-parter called Metropolitan Police Detective Love Story. Mm-hmm. That is episode 1 and 2 of Collection 17. And then we watched another one, which was called The Man Who Was Betrayed by the Sea, which is the third episode. So yeah, I'll just kind of run down what happened here. So we meet a couple cops at the beginning of the first episode here, Takagi and Satou, and they're going to get married, and he thinks he's about to have a kid, and he's thinking like, oh, I'm going to have to transfer.
Well, they're not going to get married.
I thought they said they were going to get married.
No, that was – he was planning on popping to question her later.
Oh, is this because he thought she was pregnant? Okay, so that's the thing.
He was going to do right by her and everything.
Okay. Now, because they don't spell out – like, we'll get to what happens here. But she says something like, oh, I missed my
She kind of made it seem like she missed her period.
Yes.
And that obviously indicates that they're in a relationship together. And then, you know, he assumes she's pregnant.
Yeah, he gets up in his head about it and starts thinking about, like, if he has to transfer divisions or be a stay-at-home dad or whatever. And then we'll pay that off at the end of these episodes here. And we go into the opening theme song here, which I loved. It was exactly, like, you know, I've been to karaoke places in Japan, mm-hmm. and it felt like the video that would play during the karaoke, no matter what the song is. Like, I could be singing, like, Patience by Guns N' Roses, and it would be this thing of saying, like, Gimmick Saturday Night, and I Melt Slowly, Knockout Monkey. It's just all this text going across the screen that doesn't really have to do with anything.
That's what I love about Japanese stuff that I noticed. There's always, obviously, most of it will be in Japanese. Then there'll be, like, a few words that are in English, but it just seems to be the most random words.
Yeah. Like, again, they are written out in English, and they don't really make any sense in context. Like, the chorus is like, I melt slowly. It's like, I don't know what that has to do with being a detective child, but all right. But yes, there's something very endearing about it that I like a lot. So the opening thing establishes that he has the body of a child and the brain of an adult.
Just like you.
Which... Wait, it's the opposite, isn't it?
The other way around.
Yeah, it's the other way around with me. Which, should we cover this now or should we wait until the end? Because here's the thing. I have not looked up the nature of Detective Conan or why he is a small child who is an absolute genius and master detective. So I have no idea why. I know you know why. Do you want to talk about that now?
Sure, yeah. So Conan is actually the alias of this kid, Jimmy Kudo. I don't know how to say his name in the Japanese version, but that's his name. And he was investigating this really shady organization called the Black Organization.
Okay.
And I guess in somewhere along the lines, he was poisoned by these people who I guess intended to kill him, with this poison called APTX4869.
Okay. Rolls off the tongue.
It transformed his body into that of a child.
Okay.
So now he's Conan. So the girl, Hibera, She's also an adult that's been shrunken out. She actually is the one who invented the poison.
I was going to say, she has a very non-childlike way about her. She seems very cynical and very intelligent and everything throughout these episodes. And I kind of wondered what her deal was.
Right. And I actually really appreciate that they have them hanging out with these, like, real kids. Because you could tell, like, the contrast of how they're acting. Like, here's how, you know, 6 or 7-year-olds would really act. And here's them, who are obviously a lot older.
And there would frequently be parts where the two secret adults are kind of talking and they're like, oh, these kids, right?
Yeah.
And so, okay, that makes a lot more sense now that I know the other ones are actual children. And
can you imagine,
not.
What would you do if you woke up one day and you had the body of a 7-year-old?
I think you would have more to worry about because we sleep in the same bed and you would wake up next to a child and you would have some explaining to do.
I mean, that aside, let's say I was not in the picture.
Okay. Like, I just wake up.
I would find my mom and be like, hey, mom, you're not going to believe this, but maybe can you come pick me up from the city? And then she would see me in my – she would recognize my 7-year-old body, and she would be very confused.
Oh, so we would look like the actual 7-year-old version of ourselves?
I think so.
Okay, yeah. Then I would just FaceTime my parents, and they would see, you know, the live image of their child from 1991, and they would know something had gone terribly wrong. And then I guess I would go to work, and then I'd have to talk to Vinny and just be like, hey, dude, listen, it's me. Like, you can quiz me, like – you know, you can. I'll log into my email so you can see it's really me. And then I guess I would just go about my day and do the podcast. And
I wonder if there'd be some fun things you could take advantage of. I mean, you'd have an excuse to just, like, play video games all day, you know, eat a bunch of candy.
Wait, so you have, like, the metabolism and all that stuff of a kid?
Yeah, I guess.
Oh, fuck.
As far as I know, the pill also grants you, in a way, immortality. I'm not exactly sure on that point, but I think, or at least it obviously brings your age back down.
So I wonder if he doesn't really get into any physical confrontations or anything in these episodes. Mm-hmm. I wonder if – is he immortal? Like, if you went up and stabbed Detective Conan, would he just be fine?
No. Like I said, I'm not sure on the immortality point. I think maybe the pill was an effort to create something that could render someone immortal.
Okay. An organization. Were they trying to make, like, super soldiers or something? Because that tends to have weird side effects.
I'm not exactly sure on the whole lore there. But, okay. I feel like, you know what? You might be able to be a really good, like, government employee, like CIA employee, because you could go undercover. No one would suspect you.
It's true.
But you'd have the capability of, like, you know, being able to use gadgets and understand you'd be an innocent kid, so no one would suspect you.
I think I would lean towards trying to make my riches off of being like an entertainment personality of, like, oh my God, can you believe this genius child? And I'd go on all the, like, late night shows and stuff, and I would talk about, well,
what would you talk about that people would be like, this guy's a genius?
That's the thing. That only works if you actually have adult smarts. And, like, I feel like I don't have the usual knowledge of a 34-year-old because I haven't had to grow up at any point.
If you were 7, that means you were born in 2011. So I guess it'd be interesting that you would have such a deep knowledge of the video games and wrestling.
And I guess, if you want to talk about old Letterman episodes, it'd be weird for a 7-year-old. To know.
It's really weird.
Yes, it'd be very odd. I would probably just try to become a famous genius child personality or savant. I'd be a savant. I would know a bunch of old wrestling stuff for a small child. So we get a scene here very early on where the kids are all kind of walking around. They're talking about this new game called Titan Hunter. And I like how they say that, like, the strategy guide goes on sale today. Like, that's the thing anyone really says. But it seems like all the kids are really into it and really excited, except for Conan, who is an adult. And I guess he's above video games or whatever, because he's just kind of, like, sneering.
So his original form was like a 17-year-old, so he's really an adult.
He seemed to have a weird scorn for the video games, though. He's like, oh, you're wasting your time. Why don't you get outside and do stuff?
I think in anime, if you're 17, you are, like, a super adult. Because, like, all the heroes in animes are always, like, you think they're, like,
30 years old,
but they're like, oh, no, I'm, like, fucking Ash Ketchum. This kid who's traveling the world by himself fighting monsters is, like, 10?
Or anytime I'm playing, like, a Tekken or something, and I go to the bio of some girl and say, wait, she's 14 years old? Like, what the fuck are you talking about? So, okay, well, anyway, he doesn't really seem too into video games.
Right.
And I was trying to do some figuring out the time on this. It sounded like Destiny, because they were talking about, like, it's called Titan Hunter, which Titan and Hunter are both terms.
I was thinking Monster Hunter initially, and then they went to describe the game in more detail, and I realized that couldn't be it.
But Monster Hunter makes way more sense now that I think about it, because Destiny, I don't know if Destiny was big in Japan at all. But anyway, it would make more sense for that to be Monster Hunter, but because they're talking about, like, oh, the super rare sword and all this stuff. So that's what they're learning from the strategy guide. But while they're there, they're at this, like, mini-mart, and there is a guy named Toshinari, who's a 25-year-old graduate student, and he's putting down flowers on the side of the road. Seems like there was probably an accident there. He's there with his young cousin, Noria. Noria's about the same age as the rest of the kids, and they all start talking about the video game and everything. And he's like, hey, I'm staying with Toshinari here for a week. My mom's away. So they all want to go back and play the video game.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out that Toshinari's sister died weeks ago in a car accident. So they go back to Toshinari's place. All the kids are there to play the video games.
It's a real dump.
It's kind of like weirdly empty. It's this, it looks like to be this bad part of town or something. But they find this photo album, and there's a bunch of pictures of his recently deceased sister. But it's weird because, like, in all the pictures, she's not looking at the camera, and there's like a hole at the top of the photos they notice that indicates that maybe it was like push pinned in somewhere. And it's around the time they find that there is a dead guy across the hall. He's been stabbed a bunch, and in his apartment is like a corkboard with a bunch of like weird pictures and stuff like that. It reminded me of like Seven when, you know, the killer had all those pictures and everything. He's got a bunch of anime figures and stuff
or
in there.
Crazy Joe DiVola from Seinfeld with the pictures of Elaine.
Oh, was he like a stalker of Elaine or something?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So yeah, it's like this guy's dead and he's taking a bunch of pictures and you can kind of put together stuff pretty early on here. It's like, okay, those pictures with the holes in them of the sister were probably taken by this creep.
Right.
Toshinari probably killed this dude. So this is a two-parter and we're relatively early on. And I kind of feel like at this point, I was like, okay, I'm pretty sure Toshinari killed him. It's just a matter of like, how do we walk it back and figure out the plot here?
Yes.
Which, you know, we've only seen a few episodes, but like, I wonder if that's a recurring thing in the show is like, all right, we suspect this, but let's see how Conan figures it out.
Yeah, it's not really the Scooby-Doo situation of like, oh, it just happens to be this person, but he was wearing a mask.
Right.
It's not like a swerve like that. It's always kind of obvious.
It's something you could see coming as you put the things together, not the all of a sudden, yeah, swerve.
Right.
Yeah. So the cops show up, the cops from the beginning that think that they're pregnant, or the guy does. And one of them does say, like, why is this Conan kid at so many murder scenes? This is weird. I'm just glad somebody has noticed it in this universe. And so here's where we kind of establish a bunch of timeline stuff. So, like, Toshinari and Noria, the cousins, were like watching TV the previous night when the murder was determined to happen. So Toshinari has an alibi. There's lots of this establishment here, but like Noria has been playing Titan Hunter constantly for like 2 or 3 days, just off and on, like sleeping really erratically. And the only time he remembers stopping is to watch this anime on TV called Kamen Yaiba. And the neighbor, the now dead neighbor, knocked while it was on to tell them to turn the volume down. So that establishes the alibi because the kid tells the cops like, oh, no, this happened while it was on, blah, blah, blah. And so the first episode ends, which is kind of this. And like Conan doesn't have it nailed down exactly, but he definitely suspects Toshinari based on what he's seen. And that goes into the second part of this two-part episode. And we find out that 6 months ago, there was an accident. I think I might have been mistaken earlier when I said it was just weeks ago. So Toshinari's sister died. She got run over at the place where Toshinari was placing the flowers, and she was running from someone. So somebody was chasing her. And ever since then, Toshinari's been going there very regularly and putting the flowers down. And Conan, I think at this point, is trying to like just get the evidence together to accuse him. And he notices all these little weird clues. Like he gets a paper every day, but the only missing one is on August 12th. There's this weird bruise on Noria's leg. You know, Toshinari moved into this place. It's about to be demolished. He doesn't have any pots or pans. There's no clocks on the wall. There's heavy curtains. It just – something is fishy about this whole situation here. And so he just – straight up accuses Toshinari here. And he kind of puts it together, and it's this elaborate thing. I won't go into the whole thing, but like it turns out that they weren't watching the anime live. The guy had rented a DVD of it, which Conan figures out because Noria says he was holding his pee the entire time, but he would have been able to pee if there were commercials, so he figures out it was a DVD. And it was this whole elaborate thing from Toshinari that was like, he was trying to manipulate time, and he made the kid think 6 p.m. was 6 a.m. The kid was playing games all the time. The pinch on the leg, or the bruise on the leg, was from him pinching himself to stay awake. He knew he'd be playing the game, so he put the headphones on when he went over to murder him and like had him read the wrong date on a tabloid to make the kid think it was that, like,
right.
Basically, long story short, Toshinari killed the guy for reasons you would suspect. It looks like he found out that he was the guy who murdered his sister and had a chance to call the cops, and she could have survived, but he ran away because he was afraid.
Yeah, it was pretty obvious that he was the culprit, but developing the alibi was pretty complex and complicated.
Yeah, that's like most of part two here is Conan just being like, okay, let me explain everything. And I do appreciate the like detailed rundown this show does, because They managed to cram a lot of stuff into these, like, you know, 23, 24 minute episodes. Yeah. Like, there was, even in, like, the single episode we saw that wasn't a two-parter, like, mm-hmm. you get the whole setup. We meet these new characters. We learn about what the crime is. And then it's Conan piecing all putting all the pieces together and everything. Right. And then we get, like, a post-credit scene here where we find out the cop is not actually pregnant. She was missing a red pin that she had.
She probably should have been a little more specific.
Yes, yes. She really had that guy worrying for a while. But, like, everyone at the station now thinks that she's pregnant and that they're getting together or whatever.
Yeah, so everyone at the station is really angry at the male cop. I forgot his name. Because they all, I guess, deeply care about this woman, Sato.
Oh, and it's like, oh, damn it, you knocked her up.
Yeah, like, how could you? It's like it struck me as like a older brother, younger sister situation where they just want to defend her. And
oh, and they thought that he like made the moves on her and stuff. Yeah. So yeah, that was those two. And I liked it. I liked that story. Again, I think it's very early on. It was pretty clear what the deal was and like no swerves thrown at you. It's just kind of. Like, okay, well, we kind of know the deal. What's Conan going to do to get there?
Were you expecting the show to be as dark as it is?
No. Like, the second they showed the neighbor, like, I mean, it's just straight up. Like, it's not, like, dark. It almost looked more, like, black.
I don't know. I guess if he had been dead for a while.
Oh, that's right. But even, like, when they were saying, like, oh, he was stabbed all these times in the abdomen and the chest. Like, mm-hmm. Jesus fucking Christ. Yeah. Like, this is a show that kids watch. Like, it definitely seems targeted towards kids. And it's weirdly dark.
It's weird, yeah. I mean, I guess it is targeted towards kids. But maybe more like teenagers, maybe, because, you know, I would think, too, that those characters, like the other people, not Conan, but his friends, like Ayume and, the large kid, Genta, or whatever.
The kid who really loves food.
The kid who loves food. You'd think they'd be scarred, because at this point, they, too, had seen a lot of death just by virtue of being around Conan.
Yeah, if I had a friend like that back in the day, I would stop hanging out with a friend if every time I just wanted to go play a video game with him or something, I'm just seeing corpses everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, the kid would be scarred.
Yeah, and also Conan has to be a psychological mess because this has been happening for like 30 years. And I assume this is like a Simpsons, you know, Maggie being a baby for 30 years type thing. Like, the show's been on forever. I don't know if the pill keeps you in that state and all of his friends keep getting older and he keeps getting new, weird, young, like 7-year-old friends or whatever. Or if it's just like this weird time freeze. But yeah, Conan's seen some shit, which we'll go into the last one here, which, you know, this is, it's again amazing from a writing perspective that this is a standalone episode and just gets in, gets out, introduces new characters. Like, it's so good at that. So this is The Man Who Was Betrayed by the Sea. And basically, the kids are on the beach and they meet this rich couple on a yacht who are getting all this fancy food delivered to them. And at one point they said, you know, it's fancy food because it's from a hotel.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't know. When I think of hotel food, I think subpar room service. I mean,
maybe the hotels you've been to, but like most of the, like, if you go to a really prestigious hotel, like the Ritz or the Plaza or whatever, the food there is famous. Like, it's world famous chefs. It's top of the line.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know if that was just a Japanese thing where it's like hotel food was seen as fancy. Yeah.
No, you'll get a lot of hotels that have like master chefs in them and stuff.
Oh, weird.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess we went to that Gordon Ramsay restaurant in Vegas. That's a Vegas hotel. That's a weird.
Yeah, but a lot of hotels are like that.
Okay, cool. But yeah, this rich couple, the Takeguchis, order all this fancy food and invite these random children from the beach to share the food because they order too much. And so we start to meet the people here. We got Mr. Takeguchi, he's like 53. He's the CEO of this very successful business and everything, but he's very, very friendly. Mm-hmm. And we also meet his new wife now. It's his first wife. They married 6 months ago. It was his first marriage. He alludes to like, oh, I've been so busy running the company and everything that I forgot to get married. And she seems very friendly too. We learn a few things or notice a few little details early on. She has this like acrylic necklace, this little jewel, and they also have this little dog. What's the dog's name? I guess it doesn't matter.
Isn't it Koro?
I think it's, Koro the dog. And the dog's collar is rusted, and she says, it's like, oh, it's because we take, they say walkies, is what the subtitle said. We take walkies.
That's what they call dog walks in Japan.
Yeah. We take walkies even in the rain. That's why it's rusted. And so when they bring up something that specific early on, it's like, all right, that's going to be a thing. And bringing up this like close up on the necklace, it's like, oh, it's acrylic.
Right. And the guy who ultimately succumbs to the sea is very weird and creepy in like a pedophile kind of way.
Yes. The kids show up and say like, oh, we've got these two friends coming soon. But like she was putting on like, it's like, oh, our friend is putting on like
our friend worries
sunblock
about her skin. So she's, and the guy's like, oh, well, if she's worrying about her skin at this young age, she's going to be Very beautiful.
Yeah.
And I get it. They're talking about Hibera, who's like technically an older woman, but
it's still, this kid thinks that it's a child.
Yeah.
It's really... like, oh, I can't wait to see what a beauty she grows up into, which don't say that when you're 53 or anytime someone's talking about a child, doesn't matter how old you are.
Unless you are a child yourself.
That's still weird. Like, well, 7-year-olds. God, imagine her skin when she's older.
No, but like you might be, if you're a 7-year-old, it wouldn't be totally inappropriate to be like, hey, what's her name? I think Hibera's going to be a very pretty lady when she's older.
I think that phrasing is less creepy than, oh, if she's caring about her skin now, imagine when she gets older. I think it's the phrasing. That's way creepier than, oh, I've got a crush on Hibera.
Well, anyway, when that happened, I thought that the thing about the episode was this guy was going to be like a weird pedophile guy.
Oh, and like inviting them on for like ulterior motives?
Yeah,
that'd be way darker than even more than murder.
I guess that would be darker than murder.
It's a different genre of dark, but okay, a different level of not appropriate for a children's show.
Yeah.
Okay, sure. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, maybe less appropriate for a TV show. But yeah, so I'm glad it didn't take that route.
No, that'd be weird.
That would be, yeah.
So we learn here that the Takaguchis have built a new house. Like, they clearly have a bunch of money, and they built a house with a pool, and he's been afraid of swimming his whole life, so it's his goal to learn how to swim. And we see this video, like, she shows this video of him learning how to swim, and then, like, him getting better at swimming and all this stuff. And at some point here, the kids go back on the beach, and they run into this guy who is like this weird old guy, and he's like, where'd you go? We were going to have lunch. And we did not meet this guy in the first two episodes, but he definitely seems to have some sort of like parental or guardian relationship with the children or something. I have no idea who this guy is.
So do you want me to just tell you?
Yes. First, let me say, as someone that doesn't know what you're about to say, it got extremely confusing with what happened bit after this, but go on.
So he is Hiroshi Agasa. And he is aware of Conan's true identity. So he knows Conan is a boy or a man who's been shrunken down to a boy's body. He's Conan's neighbor. And he makes all of Conan's gadgets for him.
Okay. So he's like one of Batman's dudes that like, hey, I'll keep your secret safe and I'll help you out.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. All right, cool. I was questioning if he was even a human after what happens in a few minutes here. Very confused. So they're back on the beach with this guy, and then they're all kind of filming each other playing volleyball and stuff, or just hitting a beach ball randomly. So they see in the background there the boat, the Takaguchi's boat is back there, and Mr. Takaguchi dives off and immediately starts drowning, and then we cut to like ambulance carrying him off and everything. And so the kids are there just like, what the fuck? And then they realize like, oh, the food truck people couldn't find the people on the yacht, so they need the dishes. So the kids go on the yacht to get the dishes. Dog is still there. And also Conan notices that the they say life ring. What do you when you see the thing, what do you call that?
Life preserver.
Oh, that's a thing too. I've always heard lifesaver. Okay, so lifesaver.
Lifesaver? Like the candy.
Yeah, I always thought the candy was named after the lifesaver, the life flotation device.
I guess that makes sense. I've always called it a life preserver.
I now that you say that, I think I've heard that too, but my first thought was lifesaver, but they call it a life ring in this. We all know what we're talking about. It's a round thing you put on when you're drowning. But,
and then if you want a little snack, you just take a nice big honking bite of it.
Yeah, there you go. But yeah, it's weird because she now did not throw that in, and Conan definitely notices it. She did dive in, but did not immediately throw the life preserver in. So dude's dead. They go to the hospital.
He's straight up dead.
He is pronounced deceased at the hospital.
DOA.
Yes. And the detective, his first inkling is that now has married him and killed him for his money. It's only been 6 months. It was a very, what do they call it? August, December, January something relationship. Don't they have a month thing if you marry way younger? August. August. December.
I know what you're trying to say, but I also don't know the words you're looking for.
Okay.
But I know what you're trying.
You know what I'm trying to say.
She was 34 and he was 53.
Yes. Yes. So she shows up at the police station here, and she's shown the detective like, look, he knew how to swim. Like, here's the video. He's learning how to swim. I taught him how to swim. And I noticed a thing.
Detective Dan.
I felt like a detective because I noticed before Conan, that dumbass kid, I noticed that her necklace, her acrylic necklace, was floating. In one of the clips. And I knew there's no way they would have animated that if that did not play into what happened.
Right.
And it did, although it was in a confusing way.
But I think Ayumi asks her if something about her necklace because she wasn't wearing it anymore. And I guess she says, like, oh, when I was going to save my husband, it must have fallen
at the bottom of the sea.
So that got into our heads that the necklace doesn't float. And then we watch this video where the necklace is clearly floating.
Yes. So something's up there.
Something's amiss.
Between the life ring or lifesaver and the acrylic necklace and the rusty collar that we still haven't gotten a payoff on. Something's up.
Yes.
And so Conan asks this one kid who was filming the weird beach ball bonanza. He says, can I see this video? And he like zooms in. They go into a weirdly specific level of like tech detail, which is accurate. We're like, he's like, oh, can we zoom in? He's like, well, yeah, but it's going to degrade the image. It's like, they didn't need to say that at all, but that's correct. Well, if you're going to do an optical zoom.
Maybe they said it like a lot more colloquially in Japan, but maybe. Like, when they translated it, it was just like, well, we have to say this.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, it's going to be pixelated if you zoom in on that. So he notices that she turns around and sees him drowning and waits. Like, there's a good beat before
she
acts.
And she looks very indifferent when she looks over.
Looks very indifferent, and she doesn't throw in the life ring. She does eventually dive in, but she waits. She takes her sweet time. And this is the part where I got extremely confused. Conan's out in the hallway, and his glasses, like one part of him, like does a little flash. And then all of a sudden, he's talking into his bow tie, which has like little like electric stuff behind it. And then the weird old guy we hadn't met until now is saying Conan's words. It's a real Cyrano de Bergerac situation. It's my one smart guy reference, right, I know, so ahead. I have to throw it in anytime. And so the guy is speaking through, or Conan's speaking through the old guy, because I think he doesn't think the detectives will take him seriously.
Right. And I, as far as the light gleaming on his glasses,
yeah,
I suspect that that occurs whenever Conan has like a revelation, or a revelation rather, about what's happening, and whenever he realizes, like, puts the pieces together.
It definitely seems like a light bulb going off thing. I think it even might have had a cool sound effect of like, whing! Like, okay, I got it. Yeah, I liked that. So then it just gets to this extremely confusing thing, which they were using terms and stuff that for a kid's show, it's just like, well, the gravity of acrylic in water is a certain whatever. And like, oh, she put a bunch of bath salts in the pool to make his body more buoyant. But and she's like, oh, she replaced it with a water soluble polymer. And the acrylic gravity of or the water gravity of the Dead Sea is such
lot,
that
yeah.
like saying like specific numbers. And it's like, God damn it.
Well, the whole point is that she made him or changed the water at the pool at home so he'd be more buoyant and be able to float. So he thought that he was able to swim. And then when he went out into the sea where there wasn't all the bath salts or polymer or whatever she used, he obviously had trouble staying afloat.
Yeah, she wanted to fill him with false confidence, and then he dives in where there are actual consequences.
It's a pretty interesting plan.
It's fascinating.
If she didn't film that video, I mean, she would have gotten away with it.
Right, and she had filmed those videos as a alibi, as a like, oh no, look, he totally knew how to swim type of thing, and it wound up backfiring on her. And that's why the dog's collar was rusted, is because not only was it getting wet all the time, but like the dog would swim in the pool, and like the bath salts and all that stuff kind of degraded it and everything.
Yeah, I remember hearing that the best place to murder someone, if you ever want to murder someone, is at sea.
Really?
Yeah, it's okay. The best place to kill someone.
Well, I'm never going
to
go.
As far as like, if you want to get away with it.
Okay, well, I'm never going to go on vacation with you near sea, in case you have any thoughts or anything.
I don't want
to
kill you.
You're not going to kill me?
No.
Oh, thanks, honey.
Why would I want
That's
to
nice.
You?
No, you know, you're giggling. Why's your face all red? Oh, cool. I had not heard that thing about the Dead Sea, about how you can, like, lay on your back and read a book.
Oh,
but
yeah,
then
that's what the Dead Sea, like, they always saw, like, Dead Sea scrubs and all this shit, like, oh, salt from the Dead Sea.
But I had never heard of that, and then I thought, like, oh, well, me and you did one of those float, like, sensory deprivation chambers
those
once.
Very cool.
And that was, like, a similar thing, right? It was a special kind of water
It had the salts in it, the sea salts, so you would float up, or the bath salts, so you would float. It wouldn't.
Yeah.
You're just to paint a picture here for the people, if you've never been in a sensory deprivation tank, it's filled with water, and then it has these like special salts in there, so you float, and the water is the same temperature as your body.
Yes.
And the inside of the sensory deprivation tank is totally black, so you can't tell the difference between your eyes being open or closed. You can't feel the water because it's the same temperature as your body.
Yeah.
So it just feels like you're floating, and you're in there for like, what, were we in there for an hour or 45 minutes?
Maybe an hour. Yeah. Yeah, something like that. So it was an interesting experience.
It's
for
really
sure.
Cool. I would love to try that like super high.
That would probably be something. That'd be a lot, I would think. So that's it for the episode. And like, again, they get in and get out. We don't need to see the whole booking process or anything. It's just like, hey, he accuses her, she admits, and it's like, all right, credits.
Yep.
We got there. And during the credits, we see a bunch of related clips to the episode and clips of people we've never met at all, along with words like respect yourself and invincible heart.
Oh, yes, there's the lady with the horn.
Yes.
The famous horn lady.
Revives my heart. So I like that. that. Really, really bold, filling the whole screen stuff. it's great. It's like, all right, I'll respect myself. Settle down. So that was it for these three episodes we watched. And like I said at the beginning, I really liked this show a lot. I think, man, if I would have been turned on to the show as a kid, I would have super been into it. I like how it feels interactive in that way, where you can kind of piece this stuff together and see what turns it takes, right, and see if your hunches were right. So thank you very much for that recommendation.
But of course.
And so next time, we are going to stay in Japan. And so you recommended Case Closed.
Right.
This one has come in. This is probably the most requested thing I have seen on our email accounts and Twitter and stuff. It is a show called Terrace House. Boys and Girls in the City. I think there are many different seasons. There are a few on Netflix. The one we are watching is specifically called Boys and Girls in the City. And we're watching season... Again, you were talking earlier about how, like, all these series... It's technically season one, part one, because there's a season one, part two as well. So we're watching season one, part one of Terrace House, mm-hmm, episodes 1-3. This is something that, from the moment we started panning the stream, I started getting recommendations for, and it ramped up again after we watched Real World, and we really liked it. And people said that this is basically like a more modern Japanese Real World with a really interesting window into Japanese culture. So I'm very curious to see how that is.
Yeah, so am I. I'm excited.
Yeah, so that'll be next time on Painting the Stream is Terrace House, Boys and Girls in the City, Season 1, Part 1, Episode 1 through Episode 3 is what we're watching, and that you can find that on Netflix. And before I go, like always, I just want to thank anyone who's participated in our listener support program through Anchor.
Yes, thank you.
Yes, to Maria and Dan, I want to thank you very much supporting this.
That's Maria, my mom, and Dan, not you or my brother Dan.
That is correct. Dan, we have not met, but thank you very much. Yeah, mom and pop operation here. We love doing it. We're going to keep doing it no matter what. If you want to support the podcast, just go to panningthestream.com and click support this podcast. Secure. It's easy, and we will greatly appreciate it. You know what? We're going to continue making this no matter what, and we're not here to make money. We're here to watch shows and talk to you folks about it. But yeah, if you want to throw your support our way, it would be greatly appreciated. And if you want to interact with Panning the Stream or suggest things, you can email us at panningthestream@gmail.com, or you can tweet at us at Pan. You can tweet to us at Pan the Stream on Twitter. And that'll be it. I want to thank Tom Monda for the theme song.
Thanks, bro.
And Bonk, I want to thank you as always. Thank you for the great recommendation. I really enjoyed this show a lot.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And we will be back next week with Terrace House, Boys and Girls in the City on Netflix.
Yes. Goodbye, everyone. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone. Yeah. Bye. Bye, folks. Bye, Bonk.